Steve Adubato here. This is Lessons in Leadership. You'll be seeing my colleague, our executive producer, co-anchor Mary Gamba, in just a bit. But listen, do you ever wonder what it takes, what kind of leadership it takes, what kind of grit it takes, what kind of tenacity it takes for a startup? You know, two gentlemen know it better than most. Two good friends, Keith Banks, who's chair of the board of directors at Liberty Bank in New Jersey, and Tom Scrivo, vice chair, board of directors, Liberty Bank in New Jersey, by way of background. Tom, do you admit that you are part of the firm O'Toole Scrivo with our great friend, Kevin O'Toole?
I do admit that, Steve, yeah. I don't think I can not.
Yes, and you met in law school at Seton Hall how many years ago?
39 years ago.
Okay. And Keith went to a different university that I know well as well. Keith, let everyone know that you're also the chairman of the board of Hackensack Meridian Health and formerly a top executive at Bank of America.
That's right.
Keith, where'd you go to college?
Rutgers University.
Same here. That's an Ivy League school. I told my kids that for a lot of years. Hey, let's do this. Liberty Bank of New Jersey. And P.S., go on our website, stand-deliver.com website. We're going to post this article. This is from NJ Globe, our media partners. Our good friend, we were mentioning Kevin O'Toole before, wrote a story about Tom Scrivo, his partner, and the startup of this terrific bank, Liberty Bank. Keith, what the heck is it, and why do we have another bank?
Well, Liberty Bank is a community bank, Steve, and the need was created for another or a new community bank because of the tremendous consolidation that's gone on, not only in New Jersey, but certainly New Jersey, over the last 20 plus years. We've seen a tremendous reduction in the number of community banks. They've been acquired. And as a result, if you're a small business owner, and we define that for our purposes as approximately $75 million of revenue or less and less attention is being paid to you as a customer. Customer service has really dropped quite a bit. There are a lot of unhappy small business owners out there. And we perceive that the timing was perfect for us to go in and try to help fill that void.
Well said. Tom, let me ask you this. In reading Kevin O'Toole's article on NJ Globe about you and about the bank, he said that, and he obviously has known you for a very long time. You've been business partners, close friends. He said this was a dream of yours, something you had been thinking about starting a bank for a long time?
Yeah, look, Steve, you asked Keith a great question. Why another bank? Actually, you know, there haven't been a lot of new banks. There was a time when we all remember when banks kept starting up. And that was the time when this became of first interest to me, right? Going back decades when there were a lot of startup banks. And those banks, which, you know, as Keith knows better than anyone, banks are the backbone of our capitalist society, right? They provide opportunity to small businesses. And that's exactly what Keith was saying. There was a time where the community banks were the backbone. There were community banks opening in every town. And that has not happened in the last 20 years. So we hearken back to some great times where there were a lot of banks starting up that were providing opportunity to consumers and small businesses. And that's gone away from us. And so, yeah, that dream has been there for a while. And now we've seen the opportunity, as Keith said, to be that presence again and to fill that void that has been missing now for about two decades.
But it's one thing to have a dream, an idea, a concept. It's very different. This is the part on Lessons in Leadership, which, by the way, O'Toole Scrivo is one of our terrific sponsors to help make it possible. What, Keith, what I'm fascinated by is the process of going from an idea, a concept, to implementation. And we're taping this program. We're on the 7th of April. We'll be seen later. You're having a grand opening that's coming up.
Yes.
That's an official opening. But then so many things happen after that. Keith, give people a sense, and Tom will jump in as well. Give people a sense of what the heck it takes to start up. You're laughing. What kind of leadership, grit, and tenacity and everything else does it take to do something like this?
Well, the answer partly explains why there aren't a lot of community banks starting up, because it is, as Tom will attest, a very hard process. So it started, like Tom said, with an idea, and then you get a you know, three or four people together and you kind of stress test the idea, you think about it more. We try to really talk ourselves out of it. We try to ask all the right questions and the tough questions, saying, why shouldn't we do this? It's easy to say why you should, right? But you, so you go through that process. And then once you say, you know, not only do we think we have the right, you know, group of founding members, but we can, importantly, this first big step is raising capital. And we had to raise a minimum of $40 million, and we set a maximum of $50 million. You know, think about that. So $50 million, which is the number we actually raised, was a record capital raise in New Jersey for a community bank without bringing in outside brokers and people that, you know, bring in money to, you know, to help you do it. We did it on our own with 350 investors. So you have to have the ability to raise capital, and a lot of it, you have to have a business plan. And you've got to find a location. You've got to begin to go out and find the talent that will actually go out there and run the bank. You know, Tom and I are partners where, as you said, chair and vice chair, we work very well together, very closely, but we're not running the bank. We have oversight responsibility along with the rest of the board, but we're lucky. We have Rich Spangler, who has a lot of years of experience, Ryan Peen, and then they in turn went out and hired a bunch of other very talented individuals who share our vision, share our view of what this bank should be.
Tom, and listening to Keith, when he talked about you have to raise a minimum of 40, the government says that you have to raise that in order to be sanctioned as a bank, correct?
Well, you have to put in a number that you, in order to get approval. So what, you know, we, in addition to the, you know, the things that Keith mentioned, obviously there's enormous regulatory headwinds to starting a bank.
I'm sorry, what did you just call that?
Headwinds?
Regulatory headwinds. And you do know a little bit about regulatory headwinds. By the way, Tom, look up Tom Scrivo. He's got a tremendously significant and impressive background in government as well as in law and the private sector. Go ahead, Tom.
So those, you know, those regulatory hurdles had to be taken into account. And there were oftentimes, as we were going through that, that, you know, we didn't know if it was we were actually going to see it through. But you talked about tenacity, this core group of people led by Keith, who's been in the banking industry forever. I have not really is been a guiding light throughout this whole process. So we had the FDIC, New Jersey Department of Banking, the Federal Reserve, all of those regulatory agencies have oversight into starting a bank. And, you know, you have to put together a business plan and a financial plan that's satisfactory to them.
Keith, let me ask you something. As Tom talks about the different, you got federal agencies, right? You got state agencies. And again, they're different hoops, hurdles. I got it. But here's what I'm curious about. And by the way, when I'm playing golf with Keith, I know, by the way, when we're playing golf, are you thinking about these things or are you thinking about the next shot?
I think about these things all the time, Steve. It consumes
you. You do. And Tom, I'll come back to you on that. Here's what I'm trying to get at. Do you think, or to what degree do you think, Keith, most government agencies want to see a Liberty Bank started? Because there's hoops, hurdles, obstacles. But I know it's too, and I've been reading more and more. By the way, check out the book 1929. It's an interesting book. I just finished it. The federal government got involved after the crash. We get it. I got it. But the question becomes, long-winded way of getting to this, Keith, to what degree do you believe government, most people in government, most government agencies want to facilitate and help a Liberty Bank get started?
Well, I would say they want to help a good bank that's well-capitalized, that has a strong management team, that has a strong board, that has the ability to raise, again, the right amount of capital, which is critical.
And a
business plan, which is a requisite to being approved as well. Then I think what they recognize too, Steve, is they see the big consolidation that's happened at the community bank level. And I believe that their view is it's gotten to a point where they do want to see additional community banks come into being, the right community banks that can meet all the stringent criteria, as Tom suggested, And so we felt, you know, we did everything by the book. We did everything as requested, but we found they were very supportive of us. They challenged us appropriately and as we expected they would. But I think we all felt like it was a good tone, a good tenor, as long as we could rise up to the occasion and demonstrate that we should be one of those new banks. And we did.
Tom, jump in on that.
Yeah, no, look, we did find the environment very inviting in terms of a new bank. They definitely saw the need. Especially at the state level, because while there have been some de novo openings across the country.
Explain de novo to people.
De novo is basically just a new bank. You know, there had not been a new bank started, a new chartered state chartered bank in close to 20 years in New Jersey.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. We are the first. We're the second. There's another very small niche bank that opened just before us. Not looking the same vision as ours, but there had not been in 20 years. And, you know, the Department of Banking in New Jersey was very excited that a bank was looking to start. And, you know, once they saw the business plan and the capitalization plan, they were even more excited. And, you know, we had a very, even though the regulations are what they are, you know, everybody was, I think, I took this, took away that they were rooting for us.
Tom, before I let you and Keith go, I'll give you each chance to jump in here. We're taping this the beginning toward the middle of April 2026. At the end of 2026, I don't want to say what do you predict. What do you, would you want to see for Liberty at the end of 2026, Tom?
Satisfied customers, businesses that take advantage of the opportunities of loans, and you know, a very successful launch of the bank in the first year. That's what we're looking for.
Keith?
Yeah, I mean, Tom said it well, but I would concur. And I think, you know, what we all agreed on was we're going to start slow. We're going to walk, not run. We want to get this right for our customers, get this right for our employees. And we're convinced that we can deliver the value proposition we're determined to deliver, which is very, very high-end customer service. We think there are a lot of small businesses right now that are not happy with their current banks, that if they believe there is an alternative and a place they can go and get that service, that they're going to come to us. And so we're going to work hard every day to demonstrate that. But our success will be measured first and foremost by our customer experience and our customer satisfaction.
To you, Keith, to you, Tom, thank you for trying to paint an honest picture about what it has taken to get to this point. And we wish you and the teams, your team at Liberty Bank of New Jersey, all the best. And again, I want to thank our good friend and colleague and partner. And it's funny, we were getting ready for this segment and Kevin O'Toole sent me this. And I thought I knew everything I needed to know about how this came about, but this added an awful lot. And also check out Binge. Binge, our good friend Tom Bergeron did a great piece as well on Liberty as well. Gentlemen, we wish you all the best. Keith, do you think there's a chance we can get Scrivo out to actually play golf at the place we play golf at?
Well, we'll do our best. I think we have a good shot, though.
Yes. And Tom, my demeanor on the golf course is exemplary.
I've actually seen it. No comment.
Okay. Listen, we'll be right back on Lessons in Leadership right after this.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, NJ Transit, the Northport Center, O'Toole Scrivo, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
honored to be joined by Chief Christopher Trussillo, SVP, Chief of Police and Office of Emergency Management at NJ Transit Police Department. Chief, great to have you with us.
Thank you, Steve. I'm happy to be here.
Describe your role as we put up the website for New Jersey Transit and how challenging it is.
Well, it is challenging, Steve, but I'm very lucky. I work in a great organization. I have a great boss in Chris Calori, and I'm very blessed to have a great department full of dedicated individuals. The job is challenging. As you know, New Jersey Transit, we're a statewide police department, and we've got a lot of challenges with geography, but somehow with our intelligence-led policing model, we managed to make it work, and I'm very proud of the results we've been lucky enough to achieve here at New Jersey Transit.
And Chief Trussillo, before that, you were with the Port Authority, their police department, correct?
Yes.
Why law enforcement for you?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, Steve. And I've told people this about myself. I usually, when I talk to young people, my own children, I tell them you might have a goal in mind, but be open to have doors that open and be aware of those doors that might open. When I was at Rutgers North, I was an accounting major. And then I switched to economics. So my path was laid out in a different direction. But a door opened, and I stepped through when I became a municipal police officer in the town I grew up in. And what I told my father would only be a couple years to get it out of my system turned out to be a career that now spans a little over 40 years.
Wow. Let me ask you this. And we're doing this on June 2nd. It'll be seen later. There's a whole range of, let's the FIFA World Cup. Everything's going on over there in the Meadowlands. But the chief was also there since he's been there for 2010 as the chief of police and the Office of Emergency Management in New Jersey Transit has been there since 2010. So were you there, Super Bowl? Were you there?
Yes. Yes, I was there, Steve, at Super Bowl.
Papal visit?
Papal visit.
The WWE?
Yes, sir.
Concerts, sporting events. How the heck? How do you, things happen, right? And we hope and pray everything works out during the World Cup. But we don't know. Here's my question to you is, I'm a student of leadership, so I'm fascinated by people who are calm under pressure with chaos around them. Where does that come from for you, regardless of the circumstance?
You know, it's like that analogy, I guess, of the duck on the water surface. You know, the duck is calm, but underneath the surface, everything is. So, you know, my team, Steve, if I can give a quick analogy
sure.
to my command staff, I draw on the board a pie, if you will, and I do 95% and I do 5%. And I tell my team that 95% of the time, we can have time for conversation, discussion, and opinions, but there is always going to be that 5%. That I need you to listen and just follow direction and follow my orders. And my tip to my team is we're in the 5%. So they know, and I've communicated what I hope is clearly to them, that this isn't the time to have a convention or a conversation. We're in the follow direction mode. But like I mentioned at the onset, all of that needs to happen well before the event. You know, it's the trust you build with your team. It's you work almost in simpatico. You understand, they understand what I expect, and it seems to work.
Let me try this in the time we have. And also, let me disclose, New Jersey Transit is an underwriter of our programming. But I'm curious about this. Police are seen by many as under siege. That for some Americans, some New Jerseyans Americans, there's an anti-policing mood. If you knew then what you've experienced now, and it's not across the board, it's in the eyes of some, would you still have chosen law enforcement, Chief?
I think, Steve, I feel all of those frustrations. I'll give you an example. To answer your question directly, yes, I think I would have. I've been, during my career, blessed to do things, have met people, been engaged in big events, as you mentioned. My experience with the Port Authority, I wouldn't want to repeat it, but I wouldn't trade it for $1 million.
By the way, Chief, were you there in 9/11? Sorry for interrupting.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You know, you're right, though, about the tension between society and police. And the difficult part is in policing, without the public's trust, you can't be effective. I just swore in 19 new transit police officers right before this. And one of the things I told them was that they need to remember that they're going to operate in a sea of hundreds, thousands of people who pass them by in transit facilities. But always remember that their eyes will be on you, and always remember that they're going to come away with three impressions. They're going to come away with an impression of our profession. We've seen that, right? George Floyd incident, right. It changed our whole country and this profession, not for the good, I think. So, number one, they're going to make a judgment about this profession. They're going to make a judgment, secondly, about this police department. But most importantly, they're going to make a judgment about you. And what do you want that judgment to be? And if you think about that, while you're out there doing the work that we're engaged in, and sometimes that's very difficult work, Steve, especially transit policing.
That's right.
It's difficult work. It's hands-on work. It's challenging work. So that was my guidance and advice to them while they do that difficult job.
Chief, I want to thank you, not just for this interview, but for 4+ decades of public service in law enforcement. And to you and all your colleagues in the law enforcement community, we thank you for your service and wish you all the best. Be safe out there. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Steve. Take care.
You got it. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media. Welcome back, folks. Steve Adubato with my colleague, Mary Gamba, Lessons in Leadership. Mary, real quick, there's a couple of quotes, leadership quotes that we'll talk about, but I just want to ask you this. You and I have had lots of offline conversations about leadership in law enforcement. You just saw Chief Trussolo from over at New Jersey Transit, previously at the Port Authority. He was there 9/11. Remember, the Port Authority operated and operates the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. He was there. To what degree do you believe leadership in law enforcement is in any way significantly different from leadership in any other arena?
I love how he described it, and I'm going to get this wrong. I'm paraphrasing, but with that pie chart of most of the time he wants to get input from others, but there is that, yes, there's that small portion of time when it is
5%.
You are going to take my direction because there needs to be a specific direction. And if you have too many cooks in that kitchen, if you don't have somebody steering that ship, you're going to get too many different opinions, and you can't have that in law enforcement. So that's where I feel like there is a difference. One thing I feel that law enforcement could use a little bit more of today is opening up your ears, collaborating and listening, because sometimes other people do have relevant points of view. But in an emergency situation in 9/11, or as Chief Trussillo was talking about, some of these really huge events, again, we're taping this right now before the World Cup. This will air after, but whether it's a WWE, whether it's the Super Bowl, we need to make sure that we keep the community safe. So it is a little bit different in that regard.
Let me ask you this as a follow-up to that. There are times as a leader that I really don't want to have a discussion. I don't want to collaborate. It's clear to me what the direction is. It's very rare. I'm not going to play the percentage game. And obviously I'm not in law enforcement or in a paramilitary situation. But I will say this, there's obviously a place for collaboration, a place for listening and having discussions about what's the best approach. But when a leader knows and is extremely confident as to what that direction is, and he or she doesn't really want to have a discussion about it, mm-hmm. there are times you've said to me, stop acting like you want to have a discussion when you really know you don't. Do you really believe that good leadership sometimes requires a leader to say, I don't really want to talk about this. Here's what we need to do.
1,000% yes. It is comforting to be on a team where the leader is sure of a direction they want to go in, doesn't play games, is decisive, is literally black and white. But most importantly, though, if you are going to approach with that type of leadership, you need to make sure you tell your team why you're going in that direction. And because if not, they may not believe you, they may not buy into it. They still may disagree, but at least if you explain the why, especially if you're not looking for input, you do it with your children, right? You know, yeah. Oh, why can't you have that extra piece of chocolate? Well, I'll tell you why. And so not saying that as a leader, we talk to our employees like our children, but when you are leading a team and if you are literally making a very specific decision, tell them why.
Hey, Alvin, real quick, speaking of quick decisions, what do we have left time-wise?
Yep, wrapping up.
He said wrap it up?
Yep, wrap it up.
It's not in the chat. Okay. So my decision at this point, and I don't want to discuss it, is to end this particular edition of Lessons in Leadership. Steve, he says goodbye. Apparently, it's not my decision. It's Elvin Badgers as our director. I'm Steve Adubato. That's Mary Gamba. We'll see you next time.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Vecino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, PragerMedis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, NJ Transit, the Northward Center, O'Toole Scrivo, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.